I'm going to be talking about implicit creativity judgments, and I'm going to give a shout out to the other people who are involved in this project, since Jack, in his characteristically narcissistic way, didn't mention the other people. So you saw Jack here. And then I also want to mention the two phenomenal graduate students who've been working with us. So Tom Mann, who's over there, he'll raise his hand. So you can identify him and talk to him after. And also Josh Katz, who will raise his hand, he's sitting in the front there, who has also been a part of this. They're presenting posters later, so if you have questions or you think I've completely confused an issue, you can talk to them and they'll clear it up. So, there's slides missing. It's interesting. Yeah. I'll pretend they're there. So our main question is, like Jack kind of hinted at with what he just said, is how do we judge creativity? So how do we figure out whether certain people or products or works of art or ideas are creative? It certainly seems like this is something that we can do very easily, and we do it all the time. So we constantly see these rankings of creativity in terms of all kinds of things. So we have creative business leaders, ads, musicians, creative consumer products, baby names. That apparently is a big thing. People want to know creative baby names. And even the most creative works of chocolate art. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, what could possibly be a creative work of chocolate art? And just so you're not totally distracted for the rest of my talk, I'm just going to show you two quick examples of creative chocolate art. So skulls with brains, and then we have slightly less creative and also sort of gross life-size edible chocolate couch. Now, in all of these cases, so these creativity rankings, and in fact, in almost all, if not all, I don't know, Jack, you can correct me on this, in all of the literature in psychology on creativity, we're talking about explicit judgments. And social and cognitive psychologists have differentiated between explicit and implicit judgments. So explicit judgments are those judgments about any given stimulus that we intentionally report. So this is something like, I think Kanye West is the most creative musical artist today. Implicit judgments, on the other hand, are those that are measured indirectly, and I'm going to say more about that in a second, and these are activated from memory spontaneously, very quickly, and without our control. So, for example, a lot of research suggests that a lot of social information, like evaluations, traits, stereotypes, and many other things, was likely activated in your memory about 100 milliseconds after I put this photograph up. And just as a comparison, an eye blink takes about 150 milliseconds. So lots of rich social information gets activated from memory as soon as we see a stimulus. And we can't seem to control a lot of that activation. So one question is, why should we care about these split-second, very fast, and unintentional judgments? I think there are actually a bunch of reasons why we should care about them, but a lot of people care because it turns out that they have been shown to uniquely predict our decision-making and our behavior. I'm going to give you a very quick example. This is a study a couple of years ago from Science, and here the researchers were interested in looking at how people's judgments, how well people's judgments of their partner, the positivity or negativity of their partner, predicts how these judgments predict their marital satisfaction across 4 years. So they brought newlyweds into the lab. That's the thing to do, I guess, when you're a newlywed, you go immediately to a psychology experiment lab. So that may say something about the participants. But then they collected judgments from them every 6 months for 4 years. And they looked at their explicit judgments of the positivity or negativity of their partners and their implicit judgments. And it turns out that what predicts marital satisfaction 4 years later is participants' implicit evaluation of their partner's goodness or badness, how positive their partner is. Their explicit judgments didn't predict anything. Okay, so that's one example. And we reacted to this kind of literature and got inspired to think about, well, do we make implicit creativity judgments? Our first task to figure this out was to try and come up with a measure, a way to capture people's implicit creativity judgments. So we looked to the very well-established implicit measures of evaluation. So maybe you've heard of the IAT, the implicit association test. We didn't use that. We used another well-established task called the affective misattribution procedure, or the AMP. So what I'm going to do is just say a couple of words about what this measure looks like, how it measures implicit evaluation, and then tell you about how we tweaked it to measure implicit creativity. Just before I get into the actual measure, just a reminder that research has shown that this type of measure seems to capture our evaluation of any given stimulus very quickly, unintentionally, and without our control. In other words, our implicit evaluation. So this is a computer-based task with many dozens of trials. I'm going to show you what happens on a given trial, and there are three things that happen in any given trial. So the first thing that happens is that some photograph comes up of a stimulus. And this is the thing that we care about. We want to know whether this person is implicitly evaluated in a positive way or a negative way. So this person, let's call him, Bob. Bob will show up for a fraction of a second. Some of you are very familiar with Bob from a lot of our work in the lab. After Bob shows up and disappears, the next thing that happens is a Chinese ideograph shows up, and we make sure that all our participants are unfamiliar and so can't read these ideographs. So to them, they're just these abstract images. That shows up for a fraction of a second, and then the next thing that happens is a backward mask. And here, participants are asked, is this ideograph, so the one that just showed up, more or less pleasant than average? So this is their task on every trial, to answer this question. And what this allows us to do is to measure whether the presence of Bob compared with other random strangers, whether that affects how likely participants are to say that they like, you know, that they think the ideographs are less pleasant than average. So if we find that the presence of Bob across many trials makes participants significantly more likely to say, yes, I like these ideographs, then we can infer that participants were implicitly evaluating Bob in a positive way relative to the control faces. That's an example of the elements in a trial kind of slowed down. I'm going to show you just a couple of examples of the trials sped up. These are almost at the rate that participants would see them. They're a little slower because PowerPoint can't handle that speed. But participants, again, are watching this unfold. That title right there is, of course, not there. And they just have to press a key, the D key or the K key, to say whether the ideograph is more versus less pleasant than average. So an example would look like another trial. So you get this sense that we are really interested in participants' reactions to these very rapidly presented photographs in this case. So in a dramatic display of our own creativity, we called our version of the task the creativity misattribution procedure, the CREAMP, instead of the AMP. And I'll show you how we changed it. It's again the case that the thing we're interested in appears first in a sequence. The next thing that happens is that an abstract painting appears. Also, we make sure that participants are unfamiliar with these paintings, and the way that we did that is we had Josh create hundreds of versions of these abstract paintings. And it shows up for a fraction of a second, and then the mask shows up again, and now participants are asked, this question here is the painting more or less creative than average? And so to the degree that participants are implicitly judging Bob as creative, they should be more likely on trials where Bob appears to say this painting is creative. Okay, so our theoretical questions that I'll be talking about today, I'll tell you briefly about three studies. The first study, we just wanted to get a sense for whether there's evidence that people make these kinds of judgments. We then wanted to figure out whether these types of judgments predict stuff that we would care about. And finally, are there interesting factors that affect the likelihood of forming these kinds of judgments? So in the first study, we used participants who are part of a pool you may have heard about, Amazon Mechanical Turk. And then the procedure is very simple. So we introduce participants to a novel person, and we describe this person as creative in a number of ways that I'll tell you more about in a second. Then participants complete both the AMP and the CREAMP. So we're measuring their implicit positivity and their implicit creativity to make sure that implicit creativity is actually a unique construct. It's not just some variant of evaluation. Now, our first hurdle with this project was to figure out, well, what should we name this novel, totally fictional person who's going to be described as very creative to participants? We can't use Bob. I'm sorry for Bobs in the room. Bob seemed like it might not immediately get that creative reaction. And so we are inspired by our obviously very creative and eminent colleague, Trevor. So Trevor, yes, we borrowed your name for these studies. So participants are told, you're going to meet Trevor, the one and only Trevor, and they're told, you don't have to read through all this, but they're told, we're going to be telling you true information about this person, this local person in a well-known city. I'm just going to give you some snippets of what we tell participants so you can get the idea. So Trevor's hoping to start his own business. He decided to enter a startup competition. He was selected by the judges. As soon as his in-person presentation started, the sheer creativity left the judges completely speechless. He won an award, Most Creative Concept Award. We also, however, wanted to throw in, and this, of course, is not inspired at all by Trevor, bits of information that would make him somewhat unlikable, because we want to find present a case where participants are forming implicit creativity. This person is implicitly creative, and yet I don't necessarily like him, to further make the argument that these are actually independent kinds of implicit judgments. And so this just says a lot of talented people were eager to work with him. He didn't really get along with people, but he needed the extra help, so he reluctantly hired a few. This is an example of one of his bad behaviors. He threw his phone at an intern and over a minor disagreement. But then the last kind of summary statement is that even though this guy is kind of a jerk, again, nothing about our own Trevor Pinch, but he's a very creative person. Our hypotheses are as follows, that participants will implicitly judge this novel person as creative, more creative than the control faces, these other random faces of people they don't know, but also less implicitly positive than control faces. So these are the kinds of data that I'm going to be showing you for all three studies. On the y-axis here is just simply the proportion of the paintings that participants judged as more pleasant or more creative than average. So higher numbers here indicate greater implicit positivity, greater implicit creativity. In the legend there, the blue indicates trials with the control faces, the red indicates trials with Trevor. On the x-axis are the two types of measures. So for implicit positivity, first we see that, as we would expect based on a lot of work, participants are implicitly evaluating Trevor in a negative way. They as indicated by how they're judging the paintings that follow Trevor compared with the control faces, less pleasant than the control faces. Implicit creativity, however, the direction is reversed. They seem to be significantly evaluating this person as more creative than control faces. So in the next study that I'll tell you about, we wanted to make sure that same pattern emerged. And we also wanted to look at, well, how do these implicit judgments compare with their explicit judgments, the types of judgments that are throughout all of the literature on these issues, and then start to test whether these types of judgments predict things that we care about, decision-making and behavioral intentions, as well as behavior. Here we again use participants from Amazon's Mechanical Turk. The setup was very similar. We introduced a person as creative in the same kind of way. They completed again the AMP and the CREAMP. We also added explicit creativity and liking measures, and then we asked them for behavioral intention types of questions about Trevor. The explicit creativity measure was very simple. This is how it's usually measured. We gave them three items. This is an example. It's just, how creative do you think Trevor is? The explicit liking, same thing, three items, very face valid. How likable is Trevor on a 1 to 9 scale? The behavioral intentions were as follows. We asked participants these four things. How interested would you be in reading an op-ed written by Trevor? How much would you want to be able to talk to someone like him if you had a problem? How much would you think, as a coworker, he'd be organized and on time? Do you think he'd be generally concerned with following rules? In terms of first, their implicit judgments, we got the same general pattern that we got in the previous study, except it's a little weaker, and I'll say something about that in the next study. So the same effect for positivity, the same directional effect for implicit creativity. But here we found that their implicit judgments of creativity did predict some of those behavioral intentions, and in particular, two of the ones that are highlighted here. For those of you who care about the stats, I'll put them up, but I'll just tell you that their implicit judgments of creativity uniquely predicted how much they said they'd want to read an op-ed by Trevor, as well as how likely they think Trevor would be to follow rules. So we replicated the basic pattern of the effects on the implicit judgments. We also found these implicit judgments of creativity are not just redundant with explicit judgments. They're in fact not correlated with them. We also found some initial evidence, and we have two other studies that I'm not telling you about that provide additional evidence that these types of implicit judgments do seem to uniquely predict our behavioral intentions. Finally, in study three, we went in a somewhat different direction. In the studies I've told you about so far, we've presented this very clear evidence that Trevor is creative. It's not ambiguous. He's talked about it as being very creative. But we wondered, might it be the case that the threshold of evidence needed for a judgment of implicit creativity differs depending on personal characteristics of the target? Now, we could ask lots of questions about this. We decided to look in our first study on this question at men versus women. Do we need less evidence to implicitly judge a man versus a woman as creative? So here, we're simply manipulating whether the target is a man or a woman. We present exactly the same evidence, basically the same evidence that I showed you before, but we're manipulating participants see either a man or a woman. And then we can check whether just this simple manipulation affects participants' implicit judgments of creativity as well as explicit judgments of creativity, as well as liking. Again, we went to Amazon Mechanical Turk for these participants. The setup was the same, so I won't go through it. I'm just going to show you, get right to the data. These are their explicit judgments of creativity. So this is whether Travis was a man or a woman. And we can see that there's no difference here. There's no effect of whether it's Trevor or Marina. So they're saying explicitly when they're asked that Trevor and Marina are equivalently creative, as well as equivalently somewhat unlikable. Implicitly, though, this doesn't happen. Implicitly, we see a difference. So this is Trevor over here. This is implicit positivity. I'm just going to orient you to the fact that there are two types of control faces, male control faces, female control faces. Trevor's somewhat implicitly unlikable compared to those control faces. But again, we replicate this effect. He is significantly seen, we can infer that he's seen as more implicitly creative than control faces. Nothing happens for Marina. So there's no effect on whether she's likable or unlikable. She does not differ compared to the control faces in terms of creativity. This means that when participants are asked explicitly, they say, look, these are both very creative people. There's no difference between them. Implicitly, they're showing a difference, a significant difference. Using the same evidence, Trevor gets evaluated implicitly in terms of being creative, and Marina does not. So some general conclusions. We think that this is new evidence for implicit creativity judgments. They seem to be unique from other constructs that we care about that might be relevant and related. They also seem to uniquely predict behavioral intentions and decision making. And some initial evidence that for implicit judgments of creativity, personal characteristics might matter in how much evidence we need to make those judgments. Some next steps that I'll go through quickly. So we're interested in testing for additional kinds of unique predictive validity. So might implicit creativity judgments predict pitch outcomes, investor decisions, awards and honors, leadership positions, and so forth? We're also interested in continuing to think about what exactly is different from an implicit creativity judgment from an explicit creativity judgment. So are implicit creativity judgments, are people even aware of them? Why aren't they mapping onto their explicit judgments? And we're also interested in looking to see how these kinds of judgments, once they've formed, change over time when we get new information. Another next step is to look at a whole bunch of different personal characteristics to figure out what kinds of things influence when we're going to form this kind of judgment about someone's creativity. We're also interested in looking at, among naive participants, how will they implicitly respond to works of art that are in versus outside of the canon. So when participants who aren't familiar with this Pollock, this Jackson Pollock, how are they going to respond in terms of their implicit creativity judgment compared with a Josh Katz work over here? I know you're dying to know, Josh, how you compare it to Pollock. Also, we have lots of ideas about how to extend this into other types of questions, like looking at these kinds of judgments and how they're formed, and predict things about known or novel products, public leaders, as well as ideas. And with that, I'll stop. Did I go over?
No.
That's it. Thanks.